Good evening, I'm Janie Reisner, and welcome to Women's Voices. Well, it's nice to be with you again. My guest this evening is Reverend Karen Tate, independent scholar, speaker, radio show host, published author, and social justice activist. Her first book, Sacred Places of Goddess, 108 Destinations, has garnered prestigious endorsements, while her second book, Walking an Ancient Path, Rebirthing Goddess on Planet Earth, was a finalist in the National Best Books of 2008 Awards. Tate's work has been highlighted in the Los Angeles Times, Seattle Times, and other major newspapers. She is interviewed regularly in print, on television, and on National Public Radio, and hosts her own blog talk radio show, Voices of the Sacred Feminine, with an amazing array of guests. And it's considered a treasure trove of insight and wisdom for our time. Her work is segued into writing, producing, and consulting on projects which bring the ideals and awareness of the sacred feminine into the mainstream world through television and film. She can be seen in the new documentary, Femme, Women Healing the World, produced by Wonderland Entertainment, featuring Jean Houston, Marianne Williamson, Rianne Eisler, Jean Shinoda Bolan, Sharon Stone, Gloria Steinem, Barbara Marks Hubbard, and numerous other women across the globe, including Karen, speaking out on how we might change the world alongside our beloved men. So, Karen, welcome once again to Women's Voices.
Thank you so much, Janie. It's such a pleasure to be here with you tonight.
Good. Good. What part did your own mother play in your becoming the wonderful, courageous, and articulate woman that you are today?
Well, you know, I think I would have to say my mother always taught me to fight for the underdog. And I little did I know at the time just what underdogs women were. I grew up in the South, and, you know, it was, we didn't understand the oppression that that women were really exposed to. Ooh. In the South. She always said to fight for the underdog. When I started to get into women's studies and goddess spirituality, you know, I started to realize, you know, just who the underdogs really were. The poor, the elderly, you know, women, immigrants, gays, workers, all the people that are oppressed by white, male-dominated, and oftentimes, you know, Christian patriarchy. And there are a lot of us out here, a lot of us underdogs. I think maybe she instilled that in me early, and where my social justice activism comes in.
Mm-hmm. Well, that gives you a lot of freedom to speak, too.
Well, I'm fortunate that I don't have to be politic, necessarily. Can connect the dots where I see fit and where it makes sense to me. You don't have a job that you have to worry about anything along those lines. You know, I'm pretty independent, and I just speak from the heart.
That's wonderful. You have interviewed an amazing array of well-known and accomplished guests on your blog talk radio show, Voices of the Sacred Feminine, women and men alike. Could you name a few of your guests, and then, of course, tell people how they can listen in?
Sure. Well, I really started to cast the net wide when I started Voices of the Sacred Feminine about 7 years ago. You know, a lot of the guests were women's studies scholars, but I expanded beyond that because I really believe that the ideals of the sacred feminine and the sacred feminine really was a big umbrella. So I started reaching out to people that I believed their work in the world were in sync with goddess ideals, or what I like to call sacred feminine theology. And I've had Noam Chomsky on the show just recently, Gloria Feltz, she's associated with Planned Parenthood in the Women's Media Center. I've interviewed people with Amnesty International, Jean Shinoda Bolan, Vandana Shiva, Hannah Rosen, Barbara Marks Hubbard, Clarissa Pinkola Estes, Code Pink folks, Laura Flanders with Grit TV, Jean Houston, Starhawk, you know.
What a list.
yeah, lots of people, and I've learned so much, and my listeners too, and it's all on Blog Talk. I have an incredible archive of shows there, and I do a show once a week, usually on Wednesday or Thursday nights, so it's just Voices of the Sacred Feminine on Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, good.
And the show has an international reach. I mean, I get emails
really?
From people all across the world, actually, who tune in. It's their gas in my tank, as I like to say.
Indeed. I have been very interested in your in-depth interviews with Father Roy Bourgeois, the School of the Americas founder, recently excommunicated from the church for ordaining a woman as priest, and theologian Matthew Fox, who calls God Mother, and exposes the grimy underpinnings of the papacy, both supporters of liberation theology. And I got to say, you leave no stone unturned, and you're not to be deterred probing of these guys' psyches for why are men afraid of women being equal? Well, I think you ask the questions we all wonder about but are afraid to ask.
Well, you know, thank you.
So I'm going to be playing excerpts from your interviews. I just realized that I haven't played my theme music yet. So I think we'll just do that right at this moment. And it is Our Life Goes On. So we'll have a little music right now.
Our life goes on along its merry way. We're looking for the good times, the fun and the play. While inside is an aching that won't go away, and we wonder why in heaven are we here today. We fight with our children, wives and husbands too. Angry, hurtful feelings running clear through. And the pain of it all dulls all that we do. And we wonder how much more we have to suffer through. Story, sad but true, of violence and killing and wars planned anew, of child abuse and battering done by men the world through, and we women wonder why must we be here too. Straight. the pain that covers you. For it's the doorway into my constant love so true.
Okay, I'm putting now on the 8-minute interview excerpt with Father Roy Bourgeois that you did recently. And the circumstances of your interviewing him were what? He had just been excommunicated, right?
Yeah, he had, after he was excommunicated, I mean, it took a while for it to become official, and then all of a sudden he got the news, and he sort of went underground a little bit, and he wasn't granting interviews, and I happened to catch him when he felt like he was ready to talk. So I had him come back on the show, because I'd had him on a few years ago, right when all of this started, and he first heard from the Vatican that they wanted him to recant his position, but nothing had been resolved. So this was very recent. I believe I interviewed him in early June. Like I said, he was granting interviews again and feeling like he was ready to talk about it all. He had processed it, and now he was ready to go public.
Yeah, okay. By the way, you're hearing the voice of Karen Tate, accomplished woman of many talents, and these interviews come from her blog talk radio show, Voices of the Sacred Feminine. So here's Father Roy.
I'm bouncing back, but it's still, disappointing, that there wasn't the support from my community and, of course, from the Vatican. I tried my best to explain my position over the last 3 years. 3 years ago, first, let me just backtrack a little bit. About nearly 10 years ago, I really started to break my silence as I began to meet many devout Catholic women in the church who shared with me their call to the priesthood. And I regret to say that in the seminary and throughout my priesthood, we never talked about why women couldn't be priests. Whenever the discussion came up, it was always, well, it's our tradition. And after meeting all these devout Catholic women, I felt that I really had to think this through. And I'll just ask some basic questions. I mean, why wouldn't women be priests? Don't we profess as Catholics that we created of equal worth and dignity, men and women, in the image of God? And the big one, though, was as Catholic priests, we all say that the call to be a priest comes from God. And the question I began to ask myself and my fellow priest, who are we to say our call is authentic, but God's call of women is not? And that's when I really began to see this grave injustice, and quite surprised to see the reaction of so many of my fellow priests. I didn't realize, Karen, how deep, perhaps I was naive simply because we didn't talk about this for years, but how deep the sexism really was in my church.
I wonder now, Father Bourgeois, now that you've had so much time to think about it, what's behind the excuse? I mean, is it just sheer effort to consolidate power, or is there some irrational, unconscious fear of women? What could justify this?
I mean, I was quite shocked at some of the responses from priest friends I've known for years who worked on issues of justice. I've been very involved in peace and justice work, including many years of work in what we call the School of the Americas issue, having worked, and when I was ordained, I was sent to Bolivia to work with the poor, and that became my home for 5 years, where I became very involved in working with the poor and the oppressed of Latin America, and became very involved later in El Salvador. And we've been trying to shut down this, a school that trains soldiers every year from Latin America, and our movement has grown from a small group to thousands. And so, and many priests in Marineau and Jesuits and others have been very involved in this justice issue and other issues of justice. But when it came to the issue of women being ordained, what I saw was somehow women were seen as a threat to our power, that somehow there was this fear of women who would see women as somehow lesser than men. Also included in my response their use of the words causing grave scandal. And I said, you know, when Catholics hear the word scandal, they don't think of the ordination of women, but rather, and I used the New York Times statistics at that time, and the United States alone, over 5,000 Catholic priests sexually abused over 12,000 children. And they, of course, were not excommunicated, nor were their bishops and many cardinals who covered up their horrific crimes. They were not excommunicated or expelled from the church. And the majority of them, of course, are continuing on in their ministry. What I learned there was that change will never come from the top down, but rather from the poor, from the oppressed, from the poor. And that's the way it worked in Latin America. And I think that's the way it will have to work in the Catholic Church. I don't see much hope in this new Pope, Pope Francis, or the hierarchy, the patriarchy. We have lost our way. We have become addicted to power. I mean, just look at Pope Benedict. You know, so many of my friends said, you know, what's with this, all of this gold and, you know, the fur and the red shoes. I mean, what like Maureen Dowd would say, you know, it's these costumes that remind other people that somehow you're above them. 2 years ago, the Vatican wrote the Catholic nuns, the Leadership Conference of Women Religious, some 58,000 nuns, reminding them that they are the bosses, you know, that they are superior. In the letter they said, we, men at the Vatican, are the authentic teachers of faith and morals, and saying to the nuns that you must obey us. We are the leaders. We are your superiors. And I just hope that these nuns will simply say to those at the Vatican, you know, you are not our bosses. We are equal. God does not just speak through you. And not only you can interpret the Holy Scriptures, as you're saying. We are the church, and God speaks through all of us, and we are equal. But let me say, in the midst of my sadness, what's happening? I'm sort of, for the first time, getting a glimpse of what women and members from our gay community, really, too, who have experienced such rejection for centuries. And what I'm experiencing is but a glimpse of that. And it just reminds me, though, that when you do take a stand, I mean, I knew what I was getting into. I knew this could happen because of the warnings I got from the Vatican. You know, from my own superior of Marineau. They warned me for 3 years. And I knew the day could come, and it did come. And it hurts very deeply. But at the same time, I'm filled with hope, Karen, because I've done a lot of reflecting. Like, you know, in Louisiana, in the South, you know, there were many who tried to stop the abolition of slavery, including many in the church. Mm-hmm. There were many who tried to stop the right of women to vote. They failed. And there are many who tried to stop the civil rights movement. They, too, failed. And on this issue of women's ordination and same-sex marriage, they will also fail because these movements are rooted in justice. It's rooted in dignity and in justice. And these movements, I think, are of the divine. They're of a God. And that movement, rooted in justice, dignity, and equality, simply is unstoppable.
Isn't he wonderful?
He's a hero.
He really is.
He is an incredible hero, and I wish everyone could take a page out of his book, because he risked so much to walk in integrity, to walk in what he knew was the right thing to do. And, you know, so many of us sell out, mm-hmm. and I don't think we can anymore. I think we're getting to the point where we really do have to stand up like the Father Bourgeois of the world. And I call it finding our sacred roar. You know, we have to do it. I mean, that's why I do what I do on my radio show and say what I think, because I think it's so important right now.
It is. It's very important. And those, his words and your words, do so much for other people's spirits and embolden them, us, to speak out as well.
Well, I think it gives people permission. You look at, say, for instance, right-wing radio, and I think their hate-mongering, their divisiveness, they give license to their brand of communications, shall we say, and we're trying to give license to our brand of living, our brand of communication, you know, our desire for justice, for peace, for interconnection, for partnership, for wholeness, for equality. You know, it, when people speak out, my point is we give other people permission to do the very same thing we are doing. I think that's our job.
Wonderful. Yes, it is our job. It is our job to speak out. Dare to take a stand. I'm speaking with Karen Tate of Blog Talk Radio, Voices of the Sacred Feminine, and many other author, speaker, Matthew Fox's interview, and it's longer. I believe it's 15 minutes. The first 5 minutes I'm going to play, and then I'm going to stop and hope we can have a little conversation. I've been very interested when I heard his interview that he said that Opus Dei members were in our government and on the Supreme Court, and who knows what other parts of the government they're in. And then I heard Bill Moyers state that many of the legislators that have recently gotten into office and utterly changed state laws and decimated workers' rights, women's rights, we know all the states, Wisconsin, I mean, Ohio, you could name one after another, they're all ALEC members, ALEC, which is the American Legislative Exchange Council. Through them, global corporations and state politicians vote behind closed doors to try to rewrite state laws that govern our rights. These so-called model bills reach into almost every area of American life and often directly benefit huge corporations. And so that's suddenly there was this amazing movement all over the country, and all these states lost the members of ALEC, come to find out, were voted in, so they've changed the face of life in the United States.
Corporations are writing the laws, and the politicians are pushing it through. You know, the politicians, I mean, so many of us know, are just puppets of the corporations, and it's getting worse and worse.
Well, right, but what I'm saying is, though, that this was a particular concentrated effort by ALEC members, because suddenly there was this just blooming of all these changes. And it occurred to me as Matthew Fox is talking about Opus Dei infiltrating our government, I'm wondering if the Opus Dei folks are the same folks that are ALEC members.
I don't know, but one of the reasons I interviewed Matthew Fox was I was really interested in a book he had out that made the connection between the Vatican, Ronald Reagan's administration, trying to thwart liberation. CIA.
We're going to hear that, honey.
and the CIA
yes.
trying to thwart liberation theology
yes.
down in Latin America.
Right.
Because, you know, basically they want to keep everyone oppressed, whether it's the Republicans or the Vatican or even our own government, the CIA. I mean, we've heard over and over again that the CIA does what they do around the world for the benefit of corporations.
Sure.
So here we are again, you know, corporations
right.
in cahoots with the Vatican to keep the people, you know, disempowered.
Yeah. Yes, we're on the edge. We really are on the edge.
So your book, The Pope's War, that's really the one where you get into how the Vatican and the CIA were, and I think even Ronald Reagan, were conspiring to break liberation theology in Latin America, correct? Can you start with a definition of what is liberation theology, and why would they be so afraid of it that they would want to quash it?
Well, liberation theology grew up after the Second Vatican Council in South America. And it was a response to the oppression there of dictators and military juntas. It was about putting justice first and about a preferential option for the poor. And there were a lot of poor there in the late 60s, early 70s. Of course, there still are, and there are a lot of poor in our country, too. It was a tremendously positive movement because it reinvented the liturgy, for one thing. It got people to meet in circles to talk about their experience of fighting for justice and the reading and experience of the Gospels. So it was in many ways a very democratic movement, moving from kind of a hierarchical approach to worship to a more circular one. And this threatened a lot of people, but you had tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, really, of Christians, especially Catholics in South America, really responding to the call for justice. And then, of course, you had notable figures like Oscar Romero, who was murdered by the military for standing on the side of the poor while he was actually saying Mass. He was assassinated. And you had Cardinal Arns in Brazil standing up to the military junta, and Bishop Casidaliga in the Amazon, who was standing up on behalf of the indigenous people there, but also the rainforest. And he was actually silenced by the Vatican. A bishop being silenced by the Vatican is rather rare. And you had, of course, the election of Arlande in Peru, and he was overthrown. So with the help, of course, of the CIA, and Kissinger and Nixon did that. Kissinger and Nixon also overthrew the government in Argentina and replaced it with that junta that killed probably 30,000 people, tortured them and killed them. And then the American gunboats protected the military in Brazil. When the military were running things in Brazil, the American gunboats were right off the shores there, protecting them, if you will. So American media doesn't tell us what our government has been doing very much in South America. But the Catholic Church, to its credit, really grew up overnight almost in installing gospel values of justice. But the strategy of the CIA was to say, oh, this isn't Christianity, this is Marxism. And that was their line. 2 months after Reagan took office as president for the first time, there was a gathering of the National Security Council in Santa Fe to discuss one question: how can we destroy liberation theology in South America? And it was threatening to Wall Street. They've been appointing very, very far right-wing people, such as Opus Dei, and I have a whole chapter in that book on Opus Dei, and it's a very fascist movement, and it grew out of fascist Spain. And so they've been appointing cardinals and bishops head over heels from that organization, which is really quite scary.
Well, you know, I think most people will recognize Opus Dei from the Da Vinci Code. Was that an accurate representation, or was that just way off the mark?
It's not way off the mark. You know, a lot of that is accurate. In some ways, it's even more sinister than that, because they have embedded themselves in the American media and in finance, especially in Europe. And even, I think, the Supreme Court has its share. and certainly the CIA had its share of Opus Dei people. So, you know, so many people are naive, really. One person who read, who's a very knowledgeable man in the field of ecumenism, religious ecumenism, he wrote my book, read my book, The Pope's War, and he said, you know, this book isn't just about the Pope. This is about the few number of people who are running the world, who are making all the decisions for the rest of us. That 1% that you were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And how they interact. The previous Pope, near the end of his time, they wanted to appoint a new PR person for the papacy, give it a better spin. And who did they go to? They went to Fox News. And they hired a fellow from Fox News who is Opus Dei. I guess people think that's normal, but it's just ordinary that you would have a member of that organization that would be out of the closet, because usually they used to be very secretive, Opus Dei, but now they're more out of the closet because they've been given so much wind in their sails by the last two papacies.
Okay, so that's the first part. Corporations and their power. Maybe all the corporate heads are Opus Dei. They all seem to have the same outlook and the same values.
Well, and I think what we're also saying is it's getting to be that separation of church and state is an illusion.
Well, that's certainly true.
You know, I mean, look at what is happening across the country as, you know, Republican Congresses push religious ideology and, you know, be damned with women's constitutional rights to an abortion. I mean, they always want to, you know, tout the Constitution, but it doesn't count when it's, you know, when it protects women. You know, and that's all, you know, religious ideology. Opus Dei, you know, this mm-hmm. is, you know, this is, you know, religious leaders, you know, putting through their you know, their ideology left and right. I mean, I've had other people on my show, very learned people, say the very same thing. You know, this has been a concentrated effort over a few decades, a very long-range plan, and I think we're seeing it come to a successful conclusion in so many different areas.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm just thinking about the liberation theology and the Catholic Church in cahoots with the Pentagon to stop all that. So there, again, the church, I mean, it isn't just happening now. It's been happening all the way along. We just haven't seen it.
You're probably right. You know, it's just with the internet and everything now, and the more people are speaking out. I think as more and more people feel oppressed, as more and more people see that our rights are being taken away, or, you know, they feel somebody's boot on their neck, you know, they're more willing to stop supporting the status quo, stop supporting the institutions that oppress. Because the institutions are serving fewer of us.
Well, we're going to go back to the last half of that interview, and then we'll talk.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the former Pope. Was there a real reason why he stepped down, or do you think that was sort of just a cover story?
I did hear from a reliable journalistic source that three cardinals did a report on the scandals in the Curia, and they gave it to him, and he resigned 4 hours later, and he put it in his safe and said the next Pope has to deal with this. So I think that, you know, he's 84, and I think he was pretty aware that he was ineffective, that things were just running crazy. But the truth is that Cardinal Ratzinger spent his adult life trying to return the church to the 17th century. He just turned the clock back on everything. And that's why I maintain in my book on those two popes, John Paul II and himself, mm-hmm. Ratzinger, that they were in schism because they turned their back on the Vatican Council. And the Vatican Council, a council trumps a pope in the Catholic tradition, not the other way around. So I think you could really say that every cardinal and bishop appointed the last 40 years has been in schism. The institutional church is simply way behind and way off track.
I think I read you said that you think Ratzinger will be remembered for bringing back the Inquisition. part of the reason that you were, I hate that word, excommunicated, but because you considered, is it true you considered yourself a feminist theologian called Godmother and didn't have a problem with Native Americans and pagan rituals?
That is the list of complaints that Cardinal Ratzinger made against me and my theology. Yeah, those are his complaints against my work. And so I'm just one of those 105 theologians that he denounced and tried to spread fear to other theologians to kind of shut up and get in line. That was all part of the strategy there. And you have to understand that this is not Ratzinger working alone. He had complete carte blanche from Pope John Paul II. It's like Ratzinger was the bad cop, John Paul II was a good cop, but the truth is a good cop gave Ratzinger complete blank check to do all these things. So history will wrap Pope John Paul II into all this as well. He brought the Inquisition back with the help of Cardinal Ratzinger.
So, Matthew, what are your views on the sacred feminine?
Well, it's an absolute essential a dimension of renewal of our species and of all our institutions to bring the divine feminine back. Mm-hmm. Without the divine feminine, for example, in education, what you have is knowledge factories. You don't have wisdom schools. You don't have wisdom, you just have knowledge. And that's one reason that education is in such a crisis today. It's what we have running on toxic masculinity is about I win, you lose. It's really about rewarding the reptilian brain. It's about conquering, vanquishing instead of partnering. About domination, yeah. And it's not about joy. It's not about celebration. You know, Marija Gimbutas, the feminist archaeologist, says the essence of the goddess civilization was the celebration of life. My most recent book that you alluded to, the one on Hildegard, is exciting in this regard because she was definitely bringing the divine feminine back and in the 12th century. And I think it's one of the greatest ironies of all is that it was Cardinal Ratzinger, Pope Benedict XVI, before he quit, one of the last things he did was canonize Hildegard, both a saint and a doctor of the church. And yet she is a Trojan horse because she is incarnating, really, the divine feminine. For example, around creativity, she says there is wisdom in all creative works. And she was a first-class musician, composer, lyricist. She wrote the first opera ever in the West. It's 300 years older than any other opera. She was a healer, working with herbs and even crystals and animals. She had a shamanistic dimension to her. She was a scientist. She wrote over 10 books. So she's just an amazingly Renaissance woman. But she also, one of her biggest themes was the divine feminine, and is present in so much of her imagery. For example, she calls Mary the ground of all being. Well, that's a stunning statement. That really makes Mary a goddess.
Right,
but the ground
right.
of all being. I mean, other mystics call God the ground of all being. She calls Mary the ground of all being. It's very profound.
Well, doesn't it surprise you that Ratzinger would have, you said canonized her?
Both canonized her and made her a doctor of the church. And there have only been three other women who've been named doctor of the church. About 30 men, but three women, so she's the fourth.
Well, it
so,
seems like a conflict of interest for him.
Well, it's an irony. It's an irony. See, I don't think he knew what he was doing. I don't think he read Hildegard that closely, but he was German, and Hildegard was German, and I think that he kind of did it more out of a pious streak, because the Germans have often, for centuries, been calling her a saint, so he kind of, in effect, said, well, let's make this thing official. The last chapter of my book on Hildegard is she a Trojan horse who's been brought into not only the patriarchal Vatican, but into the patriarchy of society. In her day, she wrote Pope's letters to the Pope, to the Emperor, to kings, telling them they were out of touch with Lady Justice, and they should change their ways and all the rest. Oh, she has some very strong things to
and
say
she
about
lived,
Pope.
And she lived through it. They didn't find a way to burn her at the stake. I've read that you've said the Vatican, the Taliban, extremist Christians, they all share in common their fear of the divine feminine and equal rights for women. Forgive me if this is if this is just a crazy question, but really, what is so has them so afraid? Is it simply not wanting to share power? I mean, can it be that simple?
No, I think there's more to it than that. I think it's the fear of the goddess Chaos, because in the ancient times, in goddess times, Chaos was represented as a goddess. So she was integrated into culture. And, of course, Chaos is part of creativity. And I think it's ultimately it's a fear of creativity and a fear of losing control.
Well, not only is it ridiculous, it's unjust. And how can you be taken seriously in religion if you perpetuate injustice?
One deep dimension to Jesus that made him stand out as a revolutionary was his attitude toward women.
Right.
That he broke taboo with both the Jewish laws of his time and with the Roman laws of his time. Brian Swim on the New Universe story and how it does contain elements of a very healthy spiritual consciousness.
Alongside the science.
Alongside the science, absolutely,
right.
Because of
yeah, that's really
awe
what I
and wonder. And
yeah,
Einstein talked about that too, that he said that mystery and awe and wonder is what all science is about. And he said we're given two brains. One should serve, the intellectual brain should serve the intuitive brain. And of course, the intuitive brain is the mystical brain. It's the brain of values and feeling. He says
and
the intellect does not give us values.
Right.
The intellect gives us methods, but the intuition gives us values. But he said in our culture, we've ignored the intuitive brain, and everything is about the rational. This is Einstein. No one can accuse him of being anti-intellectual. He's nailed it. I think that our educational system, for example, leaves out the awe and the wonder, and therefore the kids are bored.
And those are the representative of the feminine, too, the creative, the intuitive, that's, you know, marginalized as being unimportant. So words of wisdom would you give to listeners who hope to usher in a new world?
I think the key is to develop your mystical and prophetic faculties. The mystic is the lover and the prophet is the warrior. And we all need that energy, that until you develop both of those, you're not adult in your spirituality. Some people, I think, have been misled to think the spirituality is just about spiritual experiences. No, it's also about service. It's also about rattling cages and interfering. So Rabbi Heschel defines a prophet as one who interferes. There is this passion, put your love to practice, and that's where justice and compassion come in, to stand up and be counted. And I think that's the real test of healthy spirituality.
That was wonderful. Thank you for that.
I really enjoyed talking to him, too. They're great guys.
Yes, absolutely. They both were. And they're really perfect for a women's voices, I think. We all need to hear men who speak like that.
Oh, you know, I agree. I try to find like-minded men wherever I can because I think it's so important for other men to hear their voices and for women, too, because I think sometimes women get caught up in the idea that men don't get it, but so many men really do. There's so many men out there who really are our partners.
Right, right. I'm thinking if somebody wanted to call in, would that be all right with you?
Sure.
Okay, the number here is 937-5103. If you're long distance, 707-937-5103. Okay, let me see. Did you want to say a little more about the film?
Oh, yeah. Well, the film, Women Healing the World, it's just started making the rounds of the film festivals. These last few months, they've been to Sundance and all the big names and, you know, big name and smaller name film festivals. Sharon Stone, actress, is also one of the executive producers. Lots of wonderful women in the film, and I am so thrilled that they did not shy away from two things that you hardly ever see covered Number one was pre-patriarchal times. They talk about the time of the goddess and how we think it was different for women then. And they also are not afraid to gently bring up the fact that religion has, is the cause of so many of these problems. And what we are really looking for is partnership. It's a very clear message in the end, that we want partnership with men, but we have to address all of these different areas that either show us the way in the sense of, goddess spirituality, when we believe it was about the we and the us, rather the I and the me, like it is today in, patriarchy, capitalism, this predator capitalism we live in. So I think in a very entertaining way, it sort of tells you the whole picture. You know, it goes back to the beginning, thousands of years ago in the time of the goddess, and moves forward to our struggles today and what it will take to heal ourselves and heal the world. I think it's a great documentary.
Mm-hmm.
Once it makes the film festival circuit, I think the DVDs will probably be available for people to purchase inexpensively, so that they can really saturate, communities out there with people showing them screenings in their living rooms. I mean, everybody needs to see what's in this documentary.
Mm. Well, I'm hoping that perhaps it could come here. We have a wonderful film festival, so that would be very exciting. You know, when we're talking about the shift that needs to happen, it's more than just thinking about partnering. It's a deepness in the heart of awakening to the mother. And it's a heart shift that really needs to happen.
Well, yeah, it's a heart shift. I mean, you can call it empathy, you can call it compassion, and it's in such short supply out there. You know, we have so many people talking about rugged individualism and takers, as if there's a level playing field out there, as if everybody grows up with the same opportunities. It's really insane, when you think about it. And I think the people who say stuff like that, they usually have benefited from white male privilege, mm-hmm. and they don't even get it,
right,
that they have benefited from white male privilege. And how many people are being hurt,
yeah.
Whether we're talking about austerity or whether
right.
we're talking about the social safety net.
Right.
You know?
We have a call.
Okay.
Good evening. You're on Women's Voices.
Hello. Yeah, I wanted to say that what has made Homo sapiens such a successful tenant on this planet is that for the first 90% of our time here, we took really good care of each other. And that's what we need to return to. You know, you mentioned the mother goddess. Well, that's exactly what she is about. And also I want to say there are, like you said, there are a lot of men out here that do understand that.
Thank you.
That's wonderful to hear. Thank you.
He's exactly right. He's a perfect example. We just need more of those voices. We need more of these people standing up and speaking out, because we're on the edge of a knife right now, and sometimes it feels like it can tip either way. And I mean, regular everyday people are going to have to stand up and take some responsibility, push us in the right direction.
I know. It's very worrisome. All things look really awful. Deep in my heart, I believe that there will be a shift. It's imperative. It has to happen. It will happen. But how we get there, I'm not quite sure.
Well, I'm not sure how we get there either. But, Janie, I think everything that's going on right now is interconnected, whether we're talking about the George Zimmerman trial, or we're talking about the Arab Spring, or we're talking about, women being, as far as I'm concerned, it's, state licensed rape with these vaginal probes. I think it is getting so bad, and people are pushing back. it's just going to take more. It's going to take more pushback until we are so loud and we are so big that we cannot be ignored. And I think all of these different groups of people are going to have to stand shoulder to shoulder, whether it's the elderly and their advocates, or it's progressives and liberals who care about worker rights and immigrants, women's rights, gay rights, people who care about the climate. You know, we all have to stand shoulder to shoulder, because I believe there are more of us than there are of them, quite frankly. And, you know, somehow we have to figure out how to network this, to weave this web of cohesion and solidarity, because this is, I believe this is all interconnected.
Yes.
It is all interconnected.
It is.
Because the people who hold the power treat the rest of us as the other. And to me, who is the other? The other is women, people of color, you know, the elderly, the immigrants, the gays, the workers. You know, we are all the other. You know, we are all the ones being oppressed by the status quo as it is. And, you know, I don't mean this to sound like male bashing, but we have to call it out. It is elite white male Christian authority that is has their boot on the neck of, you know, all of these different groups.
The world, having their boot on the neck of the world, or the environment.
Yes.
You know, all the war games.
Yeah, whether we're talking about climate change isn't real, or they have a right to tell women what to do with their bodies, or they want to keep exploiting cheap labor. You know, that they don't care if old people are choosing between cat food and medicine, thwarting the people's right to vote. I mean, we're fighting wars in other countries, we say, for democracy, when here at home, they're thwarting people's ability to vote.
Yeah,
so there's just such hypocrisy that it just needs to be called out. We can't be afraid.
Well, these are trying times. There's no question about that. What's next on your agenda? I'm sure it's full.
Well, I am having such fun doing my radio show. It is my guilty pleasure. I will always make time for my show. And as I said before, people can find Voices of the Sacred Feminine on Blog Talk. But I'm going to have a new book coming out soon.
Oh.
I'm about to sign a contract, so I'll have my third book coming out hopefully by the end of the year.
Exciting.
And I'm actually got a fourth pretty close to being done. The fourth is going to be an anthology of some of the most prominent voices on Voices of the Sacred Feminine, and that's looking for a publisher.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of writing right now, lot of writing, of course, promoting femme. I have some other things I would like to, you know, get on screen or maybe internet television about the importance and relevance of the sacred feminine for a sustainable future.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I continue to give workshops and appear at minister at, you know, UU churches and different groups. And I'm happy to go wherever folks are, you know, are interested in having me, you know, give a talk or a workshop.
And
might
how,
be leading a tour, too, to Turkey. That's in the works as well, to sacred sites of the goddess in Turkey.
And how do people get in touch with you?
Well, the easiest way is go to my website, KarenTate.com, and you can find my email address there. Or I'm on Facebook. Just find Karen Tate. That's an easy way, too. Easy enough to find me, or even my email. It's KarenTate108 at ca.rr.com.
Thank you, Karen. We're out of time. So lovely to have you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Bye bye, Janie.
Bye bye.
Oh, I'm on my way back to the country, the place where my heart has always been, to laugh and run and play, free as a child, living life the way it's meant to be. Oh, I'm on.